Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Joining us today is we call a horror author, and his new book is called 324 Abercorn, and it's Mark Allen Gunnels. Thank you for being here, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
So, Mark, now this isn't your first book. Looks like you've written quite a few. how did you get into writing and writing in horror?
Well, I've been interested in horror probably longer than I really should have been, but I grew up in a household with very few limitations. I can remember my family watching the original Salem's Lot miniseries when it originally aired in 1979. Mm-hmm. And they let me be in the room watching it with them. I was five. And I don't know. I've always been addicted to sort of the adrenaline rush of horror, the sort of limitlessness of the storytelling possibilities with horror. And I've wanted to write almost since I first realized that that's how books came into being, is somebody just sat down and wrote them down. And since I always loved horror and it's always been my favorite genre, it just seemed natural that that's where my own storytelling proclivities would sort of lean toward.
So what kind of horror influences you? Like, what is it? Do you like old classic horror and or some modern stuff? Like, where do you fit?
I love a wide range. When it comes to my own writing, what I think one of the biggest influences on my writing would probably be the original Rod Serling's Twilight Zone. I saw that a lot when I was young. I loved the surreal sort of atmosphere to it, like it's our world, but things are just slightly off kilter. And I am drawn to horror that I call subtle and ambiguous horror. Not that I don't like some of the more extreme stuff too, but I love the stuff that has more atmosphere, the stuff that sort of lingers with you. You know, there's horror that can be shocking in the moment, and then there's that insidious horror that sort of gets in your brain and follows you out of the movie theater, and you can't quite get it out of your head.
So you kind of like a little bit more of a thought out, intelligent type horror then.
Well, I just feel like horror has the potential to be just as deep or intellectual or, you know, powerful as any other genre. Not that I don't enjoy just a good adrenaline rush, you know, roller coaster ride, but I definitely think, you know, horror can get a bad rap, but it has the potential to be as meaningful as any other type of storytelling.
Wow, yeah. So this new book, 324 Abercorn, where did you get the inspiration to write this book? Where does it come from?
I really got the inspiration from the city it's set in, which is Savannah, Georgia. It's a place that I love to visit. My husband and I usually go there at least once a year. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to go this year due to everything that's going on, but typically we go in the spring, and I just love that city. I love the atmosphere of the city, the history of it. And it's, you know, ask anybody there, they'll tell you it has the reputation of being the most haunted city in America. And there's ghost tours everywhere and all these things. And it was on one of the walking ghost tours around the city, I sort of fell in love with a particular house that they talked about on the tour, which became sort of the model for the house in my book. And it was really my love of the city and that particular house that sort of sparked the idea that became the novel.
Wow. So it's got a supernatural angle to it. Do you yourself believe in the paranormal and supernatural, or is it just something that you see or experience a lot with the Savannah area?
I'm fascinated by the subject, but personally, to use an old reference, I'm more of a Scully than a Mulder. I'm a little bit more of a skeptic. I love to hear compelling stories by other people. It's just that I've never had any sort of experience myself, so I can't really count myself as a resolute believer in those things, but I do find it fascinating, and I do love to explore that kind of stuff in my fiction, because I just think it, like I said, there's a limitlessness to horror where, you know, you can just go anywhere. I mean, you have to, you know, you have to play fair and by the rules you set in the internal reality of your story, but really the sky's the limit on where you can go with it.
So I'm just wondering, so if you don't really have much experience in paranormal or ghost stories yourself, where do you draw to come up with writing about spirits and what happens in the house or what happens to different people, characters in your book?
Well, the imagination is just a glorious thing. Like, I don't know, I see other people going through life, and I sometimes wonder, like, how is it that everyone isn't constantly just making up stories in their head? Like, I don't know how people go through the day without doing that, because my imagination is always on the go. And everything I see in life gets filtered through this lens where I start thinking, like, how can I sort of twist that? How could I make it, you know, creepy or suspenseful? And I don't know, that my brain just seems geared that way.
So you just sort of create all of these stories. Do they come, you know, because we talk to a lot of fiction writers. I'm just curious on their, you know, a process of it. So these ideas and stories, do they come to you from, you're walking down the road and you see a couple of people talking or doing something, or is it come to you at night in a dream? Or so let's talk about your process. Where does it start?
I mean, it literally can be anything. It can be a conversation I overhear at a restaurant. It can be something I see on the news. It can be something that my husband and I encounter when we're on vacation. It's like I'm just always looking for that. And most people who know me know that, you know, anything you tell me could get turned into a story at some point. And so, sometimes it sort of gets in the back of my head, so right away, it won't be immediate. Like, I won't immediately see that and think, you know. Sometimes it is. I'll see that and I'll say there's a story there. Sometimes it's like, you know, months or a year later, I suddenly think, you know, that thing from back then, that would, I know how to make that into a story now.
Where does your inspiration for your characters come from? Does it come from people you know? For example, the character Brad in this book, your main character.
He's not really based on anyone I know. He's not based on me, but there are some of his reactions that I feel like might be my reactions, because he starts out more as a skeptic. His background is a little similar to mine. But for the most part, I start with a scenario. I sort of think, who are the people who are going to be in this scenario? And maybe I have a kernel of who they are. But really, for me, it's in the writing that their personalities really start to develop. And sometimes that then directs the course of the story itself. Like, it might veer off in a direction I didn't expect, because the characters develop in a way I didn't expect. And I get to a point where I'm like, okay, well, the personality this person has, they wouldn't do this thing I thought they would do now. So they're going to do something else, and the story's going to change a little bit. And I actually am excited by that part of the process.
Hmm. So your characters change. So there's definitely an arc to their development in your books.
Yeah, I mean, I want to make them feel as authentic as possible. And, I mean, real people are affected by what's going on, and they, you know, there may be a core of who they are that remains the same, but, you know, attitudes can change, opinions can change, all based on what you experience. So it just makes sense for certain stories. It's going to have an impact on the characters and going to sort of alter their personal trajectory as well.
So do you take, is there people you know in life that you take and make them characters, and or do you kill them off, people you don't like?
I wouldn't say that. There are, sometimes I take aspects of people and work them into a character. There have been a few times I've just really taken a person I know's personality and put it in there, but usually that's people I like. But I've done a few contests before where the winner, I write a story for them with them as the main character, but I mean, like, it's not like I take a story and then just put their name in it. Like, I send them a detailed questionnaire about their life, and I go through their answers and get an idea for a story based on that. And usually one of the questions is, you know, how comfortable are you with horrible things happening to you in the story? Because you never know where it's going to go. And, I mean, years ago I did write a story about an anthology where the contributors to the anthology were being killed off in the order they appeared in the table of contents. And I contacted real writers I knew and asked if I could use them for that story. And I had a few people who said no, but I had a lot of people who seemed, you know, to be kind of excited about the idea. So I did kill off a lot of writers in that one.
I'd love to be killed in a book.
Like I said, a lot of people were really excited about the idea. So,
Jesus.
But I wanted to make sure I had their permission before I killed them off.
Oh, geez. I wouldn't get permission. I would just start killing them off, I'll tell you. Everybody that was bad, I would just...
Alan killed them off in his head already, so it's just an extension of that.
I'm just killing them. Just brutal. Just brutal. So what do you think... So what's who does horror the best? Who is your favorite to watch? Like if someone, an author or a movie maker or somebody's going to release something new, and who are you excited to see or hear?
Oh, well, that's a all-encompassing question, but I'll try to narrow it. I mean, it's a little cliche to say, but I do love Stephen King. Mm-hmm. I grew up reading Stephen King. I think he is a great storyteller, and I do get excited every time he has a new book. His son Joe is also fantastic and somebody I buy every new book from. Some of the more recent authors I really like are Josh Malerman, Paul Tremblay. I do get every new book they have. There's some small press writers, James Newman, Aaron Dries, John R. Little, Brian Knight, Brian Hodge, all of those people. I also always get their books when they come out because I just think they do really good work. You know, film-wise, I grew up in the 80s, so, you know, I have a lot of respect for the, you know, the late Wes Craven. I loved his work, you know, John Carpenter. So I have a lot of still 80s nostalgic love for those 80s horror films that I grew up on.
It really was the golden age for horror, horror movies anyway, for sure, the 80s.
It was. I feel like I went to see a new horror movie like every week, and you know, it. Some of them were of better quality than others, but there was so much to choose from back then. It did feel like a great time to be a horror lover.
All the great slashers. Well, you know.
Yeah,
So where do you see yourself going with this career in horror writing? Do you want to get into writing films or scripts or anything like that?
That's never been something that particularly interested me. I mean, I love movies, but I don't know. I don't feel like I have a particular penchant for writing screenplays. not that I've ever really tried, but I just have such a love of, you know, writing short stories, writing novels, writing novellas in the prose form, that really is just my focus. And I mean, all I want to do is to keep doing it. I mean, I like getting published. I like, you know, hearing from readers. I like, you know, making whatever money I can, but all of that really is gravy. Mostly I just love the process of creating and just always want to be doing that.
How is it in the horror world when you're writing these books and novellas and things like that? Does it affect what gets published, you being gay?
You know, that was a worry I had early on, particularly when I was younger, before I had ever published anything. Because really, it may have been known in the industry, but until, like, Clive Barker publicly came out in the early 90s, like, I didn't see a place for openly gay authors in the horror field. And that was something that I worried about. Like, is there going to be a place at the table for me? And, I mean, I will admit, it was nothing malicious, but early on when I first started publishing, I did encounter some publishers who, again, not maliciously, I really feel like they thought they were doing me a favor, but were just, you know, warning me, like, you know, being openly gay is going to hurt any potential career you might have. The heterosexual male fan base of horror isn't going to be interested about reading books with main characters who are gay. It was suggested I should, you know, specifically market my stuff to a gay audience, instead of like the mainstream horror audience. I did discover that I feel like those people I encountered, their minds were still set like a decade back, and they weren't really giving the horror audience credit for a certain level of sophistication. And I found that, you know, most of the publishers I work with aren't concerned with that. Story is story, character is character. And by and large, the feedback I've gotten from readers is that, you know, that doesn't bother them. And in some cases, they even enjoy seeing characters that, particularly before, you know, the last few years, you might not see a lot of in mainstream horror. So to them, that was sort of like a bonus. Like, you know, it can take a familiar story and make it fresh again when it's through the eyes of characters that aren't typically in those types of stories. So
right.
I actually, you know, not found that it's been too much of a hindrance.
Yeah, lots of people are tired of that final girl trope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And your character, like you say, you've got Harold. What, that's a drag queen. So you'll put any type of character into your horror book. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I figured the world is full of a diverse array of people, so horror fiction should be too. I mean, and so, yeah, I mean, you know, some books will have more flamboyant characters than others, but, you know, I don't stop and pause and think, oh, is this character going to be okay in a horror novel? Because I'm like, anyone can be in a horror novel. Anyone can be in any kind of story because, like I said, the world's a diverse place, so why not fiction as well?
So, you know, so when someone picks up your book and reads it, kind of what experience do you want them to have, and what do you want them to walk away with?
First and foremost, I want them to have an enjoyable experience. And, you know, that doesn't, you know, it's horror, so that enjoyable experience may entail a little bit of trauma. But, you know, I want them to sort of get swept away in the story, and mostly I want them to enjoy the characters. The characters are very important to me because as a reader, I find if I read a book with compelling characters that I get very interested in, I'll follow them anywhere. So I want readers of my stuff to really find the characters interesting and just want to see what they're going to do next.
So you really develop your characters then? Like you make them a full character?
I mean, that is something that's very important to me because, again, like, as a reader, that's what draws me in. And as a writer, probably one of the most joyous parts of the process to me is when the character starts to develop and I sort of fall in love with that character and I want to see what they're going to do next. And it can be sort of thrilling as a writer to be that interested in your own characters. And so, yeah, it is important to me that they have full personalities, that they be, you know, not all characters are going to be likable, but I try to make them all at least compelling.
So, you know, a lot of writers we have say their characters are like their kids. Do you feel that same way?
Well, not ever having had kids, I can't say for sure, but I do feel attached to them when it comes time for some characters to be killed off, as is going to happen in horror fiction. It can be sort of painful when you're sitting there, and if you are sort of in love with that character, you don't want to have to kill them, but you also want to be truthful and fair to the story, and if that's what has to happen in the story, you sort of just have to say your goodbyes and let them go.
Kill them off. That's enough.
Yeah, it just has to happen in horror. You just comes with the territory.
So I guess you're not going to have a character that reappears in several books somewhere down the road or anything?
I do actually have a lot of connections between some of my books. Like, some of them are very direct. Like, you know, I did a whole series of books that took place at a college, my alma mater, actually. So even though they're not all direct sequels to each other, there are recurring characters, there are references to the other stories, and then sometimes it's even like there's a very incidental character in 324 Abercorn who was the main character of a book I wrote, The Cult of Ocasta, and at the end of that book, he moved to Savannah, and so he popped up there. And in the book I'm writing now, I just casually have a character reading a book by Bradley Storm, which is the main character of 324 Abercorn. So I do sort of like to make those little connections sometimes between my work.
Clever. So now, do you have a website of your own that people can go to and find you?
I have a blog that I update semi-regularly, which is markgunnels.livejournal.com. I do a lot of just talking about writing, about the horror. I post some free short stories on there. I do a lot of interviews with other authors on there, and things like that. And then, you know, I have my Facebook, Instagram, Twitter stuff that everybody has to have these days.
Yeah, so your fans can follow you.
Yeah.
Wow. So with all this stuff going on, do you feel stifled in your writing somehow, or does it slow you down, or does it make you write even darker than you do now? Or
I know every writer has handled this whole situation differently. For me, it's actually really increased my productivity. I went through a period. I'm back at work at my day job now, but I was furloughed for two months. And obviously that came with some worry, some anxiety. So I tell myself, okay, I'm just going to treat this time like I'm a full-time writer. That's the mindset I'm going to have. Since I have all this time, I'm going to be getting unemployment. And for those 2 months, I sat down, I wrote, you know, an entire novella in those 2 months. And then now that I'm back at work, like, that's really carried over. Like, I'm still writing every day. I'm writing probably more than I have consistently in a long time. I'm halfway through a new novel. So, like, for me, the silver lining of the situation is that, you know, I decided to channel all my frustration and anxiety into the writing, and it, you know, that's really sort of kept me sane and kept me going.
Wow, that's great. There's a lot of people we talk to that can't do anything. They're unable, or they've lost some creativity during this time. So,
yeah. So
that's good.
And there's no right way or wrong way to deal with it, but, you know, so definitely no shade to the people who are struggling. But, you know, for me, it's been a good outlet.
Yeah, it's crazy. I bet you all the horror writers that write about, disease and plagues and all that stuff, zombies, they're in heaven now. It's true.
Yeah, and, you know, I see, especially at the beginning of all this, like, people were online talking about, you know, it's a great time to reread The Stand. So people don't necessarily shy away from it during this time. They sort of, you know, tunnel into it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's a, you know, sometimes people need to laugh and sometimes people need to get into it. I mean, a lot of those movies have done really well with the shutdown. So, you know, I don't know. Who knows where it's going?
Yeah.
So what's your favorite thing to do outside of writing?
Well, reading. I'm addicted to books. I'm standing in a room where I'm just surrounded by books everywhere. So I'm always reading a couple books at a time. I used to love live theater. I still love it. I just can't go see it right now. But luckily I live in an area that, you know, typically has a very thriving theater community. So I love to go see plays. Hiking is another big thing for me. I've still managed to get in a little hiking, but I'm looking forward to the next time I can go see a play.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not too long, and, you know, we'll have to see how things go. I don't know. I don't have as much hope for the U.S. as the world, but
it's a little odd. I work at a university, and I mean, we're basically 2 weeks out from when the new semester is supposed to start, and it's still unclear exactly how we're going to handle it.
Well, you just go to work with a gun.
Oh, no.
Teachers can sanitize and carry a gun and just do it all now. Come on.
Oh, boy.
Get in there. Get in there. That would be a great horror. You just go in there and start shooting everyone. Oh, just
unfortunately, that's too much of a real-life horror these days.
Yeah, I tell you, it certainly is, actually, now that you say it. Now that I say it.
Stephen King wrote as Richard Bachman about a school shooting years ago, a little novella called Rage, and he's since had that taken out of print because it was too close to home, apparently.
Yeah, although that is a really good, powerful novel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I feel like, you know, that was his choice to make. I feel like sometimes fiction that really deals with the real life problems can help us sort of mentally deal with them a little better, because we can read a fictional story about something, so it's horrifying, but not as horrifying as when you see it on the news.
Right.
But it can get you thinking in different ways, in a way that when it's real, it's just too much to handle and you can't really process it the same way.
I feel exactly the same way. That's the way horror should be looked at, as a vehicle for that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that horror can do best, is it can take real life things that we have trouble that just seem too big for us to process, and safely put it in a story so that we can deal with it in a way like, okay, for tonight I can close the book and don't have to, you know, it's not real. but it does actually help us think differently about things, and to process emotions that are too overwhelming in the real world. But I do think it can be a great metaphorical way to help people deal with real life problems.
Totally.
Do you have any advice for someone that's a brand new writer?
Write as much as you can, read as much as you can, and also my advice is always have as much fun as you can. Because, you know, it's hard out there when you're trying to publish, and that can get frustrating and it can get disheartening. But, you know, I know people who write things that they don't even really enjoy because they think it's what's going to sell. But then if it doesn't sell, because there are a million different reasons why something may or may not sell. So if you didn't enjoy it and then you don't sell it, then you really don't have anything.
Yeah.
But if you had a lot of fun and you have trouble selling it, well, nobody can take the joy you had from it. So, and I actually think the best fiction is fiction where I can feel the writer's joy in it, where I can tell they were having a good time and it's kind of infectious. So write as much as you can and have fun. Don't put too much pressure on yourself. I mean, you need to always strive to get better. You need to strive to, you know, get into good markets. But, you know, don't beat yourself up to the point that it becomes like a chore and something you dread doing. Just keep that fun in it.
Yeah. Be That's like, you know, titty, titty, gang, bang.
Oh, no.
Every scene I wrote with that character, I was always laughing.
I bet.
Yeah, that's you know, that's an interesting. I think that's Mike's name when he's off air.
Oh,
but.
Okay. Oh. Well, I'm not saying he stole it from me, but I'll let him use it.
No, I'm just giving him a bad time. Wow. Well, you know, it's certainly an interesting category, and certainly. You know, it's good to have you on the show and talk to you. And the book we've been focusing on is 324 Abercorn, and we'll be having that on our website. People listening can do one click, pick up the book, or find the author's blog page. We'll have that up there, too. So our guest has been Mark Allen Gunnels. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you very much for having me on. It was a good time.
Thanks, Mark.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win. And also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.